The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
My name is Aaron Tartakovsky, and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Epic Cleantech. And we are a water technology company that we deploy water recycling systems into real estate.
And this is Mike Consul, your host. And can you believe that we only recycle about 2% of wastewater here in the United States? And Aaron compared that during a previous conversation I had with him to Israel, which recycles about 90% of its wastewater, compared to Spain, which is second in the world with only 35%. There's so much more that we can do in terms of recycling wastewater. And one of the places where we generate quite a bit of wastewater and really do nothing about it is the built environment, commercial buildings. Aaron, your technology, the kind of stuff that you're working on, not that you're the only person in the field, but when we talk about water, critical resource, can't live without it, let's start with why so little of the wastewater we generate here in the United States, which is, it has to be gargantuan, we actually recycle so little of it. What's the issue there?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of things to sort of break down that question, but I think fundamentally we are a country that was water rich. You know, I think we didn't necessarily have to grapple with water in the same way as, you know, say Israel that you cited earlier, where before Israel could sort of develop into the country that it became, water was first and foremost a national security imperative. They had to have it figured out, whereas it wasn't necessarily the same history with the United States. Now we are in a situation where we have the Western United States, a place that was not designed to have the tens of millions of people that are now living here, where we have a basic supply and demand issue. It's not that we don't have the water. You know, as I often explain to my little nieces who are all under 10, you know, the water we drink today is the exact same water that was consumed by the dinosaurs hundreds of thousands of years ago. Or millions of years ago. I need to check that the date. But right. but you know, it all water on this planet is recycled water. We know that. But it's just
recycled by nature.
Yeah, recycled by nature, correct. All, you know, by virtue of the hydrologic cycle, all water on this planet is the same water that we've had. But we just don't have it in the right places. It's in the wrong place, wrong time. And that's what we're grappling with. And I think buildings are interesting because buildings globally use 14% of all available potable water on this planet. And almost no buildings reuse that water. And what we found is it's part technology, but it's also part regulation. And it's part the sort of the public perception, and you know, have to get into all that.
So, you know, Israel's in a desert. So it's pretty obvious, like, we don't get a lot of water here. We're going to need to recycle. Phoenix, Arizona is in a desert. Now, it's not a national security issue necessarily that they are in a desert. They don't have a lot of water. They're holding up developments. Recently, mm-hmm. there was a development in Scottsdale that they said that's a no-go because yeah. there's not enough water. So this is a real estate issue as well. And what you are talking about are technologies that you put into these buildings. You recycle the water on site. And talk a little bit about how that technology would work. First of all, talk about the scale of it. If every building, every reasonably sized building was recycling water and making it potable or drinkable, how much are we talking about? How many, you know, millions or billions of gallons a year are we talking about? I don't know if that's a fair question, if those are statistics you have at your fingertips. And then what we'll get into the technology as to how this is actually accomplished.
Sure. Yeah, look, I think just one important piece to point out is that, you know, there are sort of the more what I would call kind of doomsday scenarios, which are areas that will literally run out of water if we don't make changes. I mean, we saw that a few years ago in Cape Town, South Africa, where they had what they call a day zero event, where they were literally contemplating the need to bring water in via ships just to make sure that when people turn on their tap, water would come out. They started rationing water. So that's kind of one end of the spectrum. Then there's places like you mentioned in Arizona, in Tampa, other communities around the country where they are seriously concerned about new real estate, new developments because of future water supply issues. But then there's, you know, there's a lot of people who are going to listen to this and say, okay, well, you know, my development or the projects I'm working on, it's not that there is no water. So this is not a fit for us. But what's important to recognize is that, you know, the way we've designed our water and wastewater infrastructure for the last 250 years hasn't really changed. It's all based on sort of this centralized model of buildings that are all connected to underground water and sewer pipes that are connected to a central facility. And that approach has worked great, but like with all infrastructure, with all technologies, things need to be repaired, they need to be upgraded, they need to be maintained. What we're seeing now is that we have all this infrastructure that was put in 30 to 100 years ago, and it's all reached its shelf life. It's all in dire need of repair. You know, some figures are showing that we're going to need to spend about $1 trillion over the next 25 years. And so why that's relevant, why that figure is relevant to really any builder, any developer, is that that money has to come from somewhere. And typically where it comes is from the local water and wastewater utility. And the way they generate money is they charge you a bill. And those rates we're seeing are going up on average 5 to 15% a year. So even if you're in an area where you have plentiful water, or you sort of think that the situation is fine, typically you're still going to be seeing these nonstop increases in your water and sewer bills. So even for projects like that, which candidly is the bulk of projects that we see, they're not doing it because they're afraid that, you know, the water isn't going to come out of their tap. They're bringing these technologies on because it's going to see some very significant water and sewer bill savings for these projects, both before they're even built, you know, on those sewer connection fees, as well as on those ongoing monthly bills. So I just wanted to kind of clarify that there's a sort of a very wide range of why this is applicable. And the simple answer on sort of how it works is that all these buildings bring water in from the city supply. That water is used and then it's discharged back to the sewers. So it's coming from showers, from toilets, from laundry, from cooling towers. I mean, every single fixture is going to be producing water. What we are able to do with on-site water reuse is that we can actually reuse up to 95% of that water. And right now the focus is on reusing the water for non-potable, non-drinking applications, not because the water isn't clean enough to drink. It's just because by regulation, we're sort of limited today on what we can do. But when you add up the amount of recycled water we can use for flushing toilets, for irrigation, for laundry, for cooling towers, these non-potable applications, all of those can add up to 95% of a building's water use, which then corresponds to pretty significant reductions in those ongoing water and sewer bills, where we can generate an ROI for those projects of sub 7 years.
So you're saying that there's regulations that you can't recycle that water and then say, here, drink it, but it can be used for everything else.
For buildings, yes,
for buildings.
So that's what we call direct potable reuse. Now, obviously, there are many sort of large utilities around the country now that are going to actual potable reuse. And some of them, it's not necessarily that they're treating it and sending it right back into your tap. Sometimes they take that, they put it back into the groundwater, and then it's sort of pulled back out down the road. But look, we know we have these technologies. I mean, one of my co-founders is my father. My father was trained in the space program, in the Soviet space program. And, you know, as he often says, you know, what do you think the astronauts have been drinking for decades? You know, we have the technologies to be able to do water recycling and to take what we call wastewater and turn it into drinking water. But we need the regulators to be able to catch up. And part of it is sort of, they are naturally risk averse, which we understand, and it makes sense because their job is to protect public health. But then part of it is the public perception. You know, when I say right now we are taking building wastewater and we can turn that into drinking water, there is going to be an innate reaction. It's what we call in the industry the yuck factor. So there's several things we have to contend with. It's part science, but it's also partly just the public perception.
People don't like to think about it. They don't like to think about this. This is water from a sink or a toilet that's been made pure. Just as people don't really like to eat meat if they have to, you know, if they have to think about what they're eating or they have to kill the animal themselves, it's like, I'm not going to touch it. That's another yuck factor. But with water, okay, so you have that yuck factor. You're talking about a more distributed system, it sounds like. Rather than centralized water, you could be recycling on site, reusing that water on site. In terms of the building owner and operator, the real estate investor, why am I going to bother with this? I mean, I get centralized water as it is, and I'm in an area where it's not running out. What is the plus for the real estate investor, the building owner and operator?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think the simple answer is cost savings. You know, I think I like sort of the words you use of this is a more distributed system versus centralized. And I think a great analogy is distributed energy. You know, I think we used to be very solely reliant on large centralized energy infrastructure, but then we realized that there was an opportunity to supplement that general approach with a more distributed model, whether that's rooftop solar, whether that's wind, whether that's hydro, and we have a mix. And there are some owners, some developers who've seen, well, actually, I can get energy cheaper doing it on site, having my own energy production, my own energy generation versus the centralized approach. We're doing the exact same thing. While we would love if everyone did this just because it was the right thing to do for the planet, we know that businesses, and including real estate, does not operate out of altruism. They operate out of what makes financial sense. And for us, the main driver of why people choose to work with us is because it's going to save them money on their projects, both sort of on the upfront, but also on an ongoing basis. That is the singular most important decision when someone chooses to work with us. Now, of course, you add up all of the various things that we do, that's 20 plus lead points for a project. And obviously that adds project value as well. And then another really important thing is people want to live in green buildings. I mean, we recently did an interview with CNBC. So we were walking through one of our projects with one of our marquee clients obviously a very known real estate entity in this country. And the CNBC reporter actually stopped one of the leasing agents in this building. It's called the 1550 building in downtown San Francisco, 550 apartments. They stopped one of the leasing agents and said, what do you know about this on-site water reuse, the water reuse system? And the leasing agent said, oh, it's great. They said, it's great. And actually it's become a really strong selling tool for us to get new prospective residents to live in the building. And it makes sense, especially here in California. You drive down the streets every day, especially during, as we go from drought to drought to drought, you drive down the streets, you drive down the highways, and you see signs everywhere saying drought, conserve every last drop. You go to a restaurant and they give you, pieces of paper that say, we're not going to bring you water unless you ask for it. And people feel helpless, I think, with whether it's water or climate change generally. People just kind of have this sense of helplessness of what can I as an individual do? Well, now just by virtue of living in our buildings, they are saving 2.5 million gallons per year in this particular project. In some projects, it's even higher. So it's a combination, first and foremost, of the cost savings for the owner developer. It's contributing to all the different sort of environmental certifications, whether that's LEED or whatever other system they use. And then it's just creating a project that the market is demanding. People, maybe years ago, living in a green building or a LEED certified building was a nice thing to do. Now it's driven by the market and it's driven by regulation. So it's all those together, which is what makes this such a successful company for us.
So the owner or the investor has to think in terms of upfront costs. It's going to cost me money upfront. It's going to save me money over time. How many years does it take for the system to pay for the upfront cost?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, sometimes it takes 5 years, sometimes it takes 10, but then sometimes it takes one. I mean, we have a project right now where we are going to be able to reduce their upfront sewer connection fees, their water and sewer connection fees, by $1 million. That basically will pay for the system. Now, obviously, there's construction costs and everything else, and those are hard to factor in, but generally, we aim for a sub 7-year ROI. but sometimes it's even faster. And especially, you know, every single city state will have their own programs for grant programs or different incentive programs. In San Francisco, as an example, you can get up to $1 million back from the city by incorporating one of these systems, and similar in Austin, Texas. So there's a pretty big range, but generally our aim is in the single digits in terms of years. But, you know, beyond just going sort of towards a more traditional upfront purchase, you know, we can always do interesting things like finance the systems. We can use third-party finance. You know, we have a really interesting project right now up in Washington State, where we are actually going to bundle our wastewater treatment system with various other green technologies on the project, bringing in third-party finance to the point where there is a no upfront cost. So similar to solar, where you just pay as you save, we can do the exact same thing with these types of approaches. So there's a lot of flexibility in terms of how we actually deploy it.
Is there anywhere where they just say, look, you need to recycle on site and you need to be able to recycle at this percentage of all of your wastewater. And that's just part of your cost of that's required. Is there any city, a town, province within the United States where it's required?
Yes. So not there are, and it's actually a very quickly growing trend. So San Francisco sort of is the trendsetter. It's the pioneer on this. Every new project over 100,000 square feet in San Francisco has to have an on-site water reuse system. And the background of how that came into being was back in 2015. Again, this was the second of three consecutive droughts that we were in. And our elected officials and our water utility leaders basically said, why are we using fresh drinking water from our national parks, from our rivers, lakes, and streams to flush the toilets of San Francisco's tech employees in downtown? You know, why are we not using recycled water sources for all of these applications that don't require pristine drinking water? So that was the main push that brought this into being. And as we know, it's the technology was really just a small piece of the equation. We've had these technologies, as I said, for decades, but it was about coming up with the regulatory framework to actually enable this to happen. As we know, there's a lot of permitting that goes into a new project. And so we had to create a playbook where the Department of Public Health, the Department of Building Inspection, the Water Wastewater Utility, we're all on the same page. So that's what happened in San Francisco. The program has been really successful. I mean, I think to date, there are at least 45 projects that are doing some form of on-site water reuse, whether that's rainwater or gray water or black water. We can discuss the differences between those. But I give you all that background just because San Francisco created this playbook and now more cities and more states are adopting it. So Austin, Texas has now a mandatory program that will be going into effect sometime soon. New York has a voluntary program. California is actually developing a statewide sort of framework to allow more cities to do this. Hawaii is doing this, Washington State. So there's, by my count, there are at least 13 states, including the District of Columbia, that are developing some form of on-site water reuse program to enable this to take off. And you know, it's part of the reason why we here at Epic are referring to this as a water reuse revolution, because it hasn't existed in this way. But we're really starting to see it take off, not just because it's a nice thing to do, but because many of these geographies, many of these governments are realizing that if they don't make drastic changes, our cities and our communities will no longer be livable. We will not be able to build more. We will not be able to add more industry. We will not be able to build more data centers. Data centers on average use the same amount of water as a 50,000 person city. Mm-hmm. Everything uses water. So if we don't change how we're doing things, we're just going to run out. It's just basic supply and demand.
What about the actual cost of the system to install it, to buy it, install it? And then what about continuing costs? I mean, do you have the Gillette model where here's the razor, now you're going to buy razor blades from me for the rest of your life?
Yeah. So the first question in terms of cost, I mean, there's a big range. I mean, you know, we can do a small little gray water or rainwater system that does 5,000 gallons a day. And then for some projects, we're doing a much larger comprehensive system, like for a big tech client, where it's 500,000 gallons a day. So a huge range.
What about a multifamily, an apartment building? Let's say it's an apartment complex with, say, 100 apartments. Sure. Can you kind of dope that out?
Yeah, so I think, you know, for you know, I think that the only other variable is where you are, because the water and sewer rates in San Francisco are going to, you know, differ dramatically from San Diego. The water and sewer costs are just higher in the Bay Area. But on average, for a project of that size, you know, you're looking at on the, you know, maybe $300,000-$400,000 just for the sort of the system costs, and then the install, you're going to add another few hundred thousand dollars, again, depending on the size and
You're talking
complexity
about
of the
six hundred,
project.
seven hundred thousand
Yes.
for the okay, and then you're saying then the ROI, basically you pay it off over the course of it could be as little as 1 year, but it could be as many as seven.
Yes.
And then what about continuing cost?
Yeah.
Because I
So
mean, these use filters, correct?
yeah, it's a combination. So it's a combination of what we call biological treatment. So we're actually cultivating a living microbial environment. So I mean, similar to what your stomach does. So we actually use bacteria to break down the water, and then we use ultrafiltration. So it's finer than filtration. It's you know, little tiny holes that are 1/1,000th the diameter of a human hair. So going through biological treatment, we significantly bring down the solids, a lot of the pathogens and different things. Then it goes through this super fine filtration, and then after that, it gets disinfected. So we use things like UV, we use things like chlorine. By the time the water passes through the entire process, the water that comes out is going to be identical to the water that would come out of your kitchen sink. You would never know the difference. And you know, as
But a
we
lot of
often
people
say,
won't drink from the tap. A lot of people say, I'm not going to drink tap water. I'll boil my pasta in tap water. I'll wash my hands in tap water. But when it comes to drinking, I've got bottled water. I've got a filtration system on my refrigerator, a GE filter, or something
yeah.
of that magnitude. Well, what about that?
You know, I think it depends where you are. I mean, I think in places like San Francisco, we have some of the cleanest tap water in the world. It's
True,
extremely
true.
safe. You don't need any additional filtration. I think that's true for a lot of areas. But again, what we're talking about now is not actually putting water back into the taps. We're only talking about using this water, in spite of how clean it is, we're only using it for these non-potable applications. But you know, I think to come back to your question in terms of sort of the ongoing operations. So again, a lot of this is driven by regulation, especially in these early days, because we're dealing with water, we're dealing with, you know, direct public health implications. There's a lot of regulations that surround this and which make it so safe. But one of the regulations requires that, you know, you're going to need a certified water wastewater operator to be responsible for the system. That doesn't mean that they're there every day, but they have their license up on the wall in the system room. And on a periodic basis, we're coming in to take water samples that we send off to the lab to just, you know, do basic audio visual inspections to make sort of occasional adjustments. And typically that's an annual contract that people bring us on. They don't need to work with us, but they typically opt to just because of the level of service that we provide. We just basically simplify the entire process for them. And so it's just a monthly fee that is going to be less than whatever the monthly water and sewer savings are. And so that's what allows us to produce those overall savings for them. So, you know, in some cases we're saving these buildings $150,000, $200,000 a year on their water and sewer bills. They're paying us a percentage of that, and then they pocket the rest of the savings.
So the that 100-unit apartment building again, their continuing cost would be is it strictly, hey, you're gonna you get a percentage of the savings, or are they actually saying every so off every month we need new filters, or every 3 months we need new filters, and it's going to cost us this much? I
Yeah,
realize that
so
there's different scales and all. I mean, you're talking about, you know, a high-rise office building
yeah.
versus, you know, an apartment building or whatever.
But I'll make it easy. I'll just give you some concrete numbers. So, you know, we have a project right now where they will be saving about $100,000 a year on their water and sewer bills. They will be paying us an annual fee to run to operate the system of around $40,000. So, you know, when you factor in energy costs and everything else, they're saving about $50,000 a year. So that system costs $300,000. Then you can sort of calculate out the savings that way, but you'll see it's just a few years before the system pays for itself. And then after that, they're just making money back.
Now, you were talking about certain municipalities are saying, hey, this is required because, you know, it's important, it's required. And that model is starting to spread somewhat. But short of that, how big a, how difficult a sale is it to building owners and investors at this stage? Do they see the obvious, for instance, an apartment building is like, look, we attract a lot of young people. Young people are always interested in whether we're LEED certified or not. They want to know if we're using renewable energy. They want to know if we're recycling water on site or not. Is it how difficult a sale is it to people who operate these buildings?
Well, I mean, I like to think that it's not just young people that want to live in a nice, healthy, green building, but the short answer is it's not so difficult. I mean, I think candidly, our company, our biggest challenge right now is that there is so much demand.
You're saying the financial calculus is enough. They see the wisdom in it. They're doing the right thing, but like you said, they're not in business for altruism. Although doing the right thing oftentimes brings you more tenants and stickier tenants. Yes. So there's that aspect of it, but they also can pencil this out and say, this makes sense from just strictly a financial standpoint. Even if I don't get a single tenant, extra tenant or an extra lease fee out of each of my tenants. So what about, it sounds like you're saying keeping up with the manufacturing is a bigger challenge than actually selling the systems.
So it's not actually keeping up with the manufacturing. It's just keeping up with the amount of inbound interest, which again, easily remedied. And we are scaling up to be able to match that. The manufacturing, actually, we have pretty sorted out and we have great partners that can keep up with everything going on. Cause again, it's not it's typically not that they need a system tomorrow. You know, I think we generally have plenty of time with permitting and everything else to be able to scale manufacturing to keep up with these projects.
What if I'm building right now and I say, listen, you just came into my consciousness. This just happened. I'm in building phase right now. What do I do? Is it the kind of thing that, look, it's fine, complete the building. We can just go ahead and install the system when complete. In fact, maybe that's the way it works. Aaron, do you just say, we want you to complete the building and then we'll just install it? Or is it better to actually do it during the installation during construction phase?
Yeah, I mean, generally we want to get involved earlier because again, it's not just about having space for the system in the actual project. You typically in the basement of the building, but you have to have the infrastructure in place. So when you are distributing recycled water, you actually need what are called purple pipes. These are pipes that are very, as it sounds, literally colored purple, and they are sort of the international symbol designating recycled water, just like a red pipe is just designating fire water. That has to be designed in generally from the beginning. Now, the one caveat to that is in a retrofit opportunity, you know, let's say you have a resort and that resort has a large cooling tower and you have a big irrigation demand. In that case, you know, we can actually capture that wastewater, treat it, and then just have a single purple pipe going to the cooling tower or a single purple pipe routing all that treated water to the irrigation. So, retrofits are possible, but the reason why it's generally better for us to get involved earlier is so that we can make sure that we are designing the system to sort of integrate into the rest of the project, that they're leaving space, not just for the system, but for the tanks. I mean, tanks are typically what are going to take up more space because you need a tank to hold the untreated water, and then you need a tank to hold the treated water. But what we found is that those types of questions are typically not going to be the biggest obstacle. I mean, I think, you know, kind of going back to your original question, the financials are going to drive the decision making for someone to bring us on. But
go ahead.
So yes, I mean the financials, so the actual savings. So one of the biggest obstacles that we see is just that this is new. I mean, I think you yourself said, you know, people are used to designing buildings a certain way. Maybe it's just easier to bring water in like we normally do. We just connect up to the city and then we send wastewater out through the sewer. And that is how things have been done for a very long time. And so some people, even with the prospect of cost savings, are still going to say, do I really want to take on that additional, you know, that additional complication, that additional headache? And that's going to be the case for any new technology, any new approach. But what's great is that we've kind of passed that phase. I mean, we're working with some of the biggest developers, contractors, engineers, architects in the world who are now basically specifying us into every project because they've done it now. They understand that it's not scary. It's not a risk to the project. It's easy. And so I think that candidly was probably the single biggest challenge, but I think we're very quickly getting past that.
If you are any good businessman, looks to upsell. So I install a system. I'm 3 years into it. And do you come around then and say, you know, you're using old technology. We've got a new whiz bang system that's much better. And you can even drink from it. I mean, you can drink from the water now. As my understanding, it's as good as tap water anyway. You know, there's the yuck factor and there's also regulations around that. But the technology is going to advance, I'm sure, like all technology does. Is this a matter of, look, I'm 3 years into this now, here he is coming around with a new system that's better, whiz bang. What about that?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. It's not that we will need to replace the system, but we will constantly be upgrading components. So there's a very strong software component to what we do. And again, just like an app on your phone or your Tesla car, that can be sort of flashed remotely. We can upgrade software. That's easy. But things like the membranes that I mentioned before, which, you know, I think you'd mentioned how often you have to change them. I mean, these membranes last for 10 years. These are extremely robust. But a lot of the system is modular and you can basically swap components in and out. So we will always, always as a company be improving the technology, just like sort of the early computers took up an entire room and now we have the same computing power in our cell phones. We'll be doing the same thing, but generally it'll be component upgrades or software upgrades versus us saying, you know, we need to rip out this 2,000-pound system and put something else in. We don't anticipate that being the case.
Well, this is exciting stuff and it's sensible stuff. I mean, it just makes so much sense. You're one of, as this grows, as more municipalities say, this is required, you can have more and more players in the field. On the one hand, it creates business for you. On the other hand, it creates competition for you. So there's always that. What else should we know about this? Just in wrapping up, what else might, especially if you're thinking from a real estate investor or a building operator standpoint, what else should they know?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think I'll give you one example of just how safe the water is. You know, I think I understand that no matter how much science I'm throwing at people now, there's going to be skepticism about how clean the water is. And we understand that. And so what we actually did was in that building I mentioned at the outset with Related here in San Francisco, 550 apartment building, we're operating the first gray water system in the country, in the city. What we actually did was we took water that we're treating from showers, from laundry, and from bathroom sinks, put it through the entire advanced purification process. And again, we said, look, you don't have to take our word for it, how clean the water is. We actually partnered with a local brewery. We supplied them with 2,000 gallons of that treated water and we made beers. So we actually took the building's laundry water and we produced what we call our Epic One Water Brew, which, you know, we intended, it wasn't a commercial product. We intended to use it at trade shows and events and different things. But then as you can imagine, it went viral. So I think to date, it has gotten about 1.5 billion media impressions. It's been covered in, I mean, every publication you can imagine. And then actually just a few weeks ago, it was named one of Time Magazine's best inventions of the year.
I knew about that, but that was your product. That was your water that was made into beer.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Wow. Okay. And it won, one of the best products of the year by Time Magazine.
Yeah. And what's amazing is that last year, our new system, the One Water system, was named a Time Best Invention of the Year. Now our beer with water produced from that type of system is now a Time Best Invention of the Year. So it's gaining traction. And I think so much of what we're doing is not just trying to sell to technology. We're trying to change the conversation around the water. We're finding new, interesting ways to engage people. And so I think, you know, for your listeners, I think the biggest takeaway is just to think about, you know, does water and wastewater, does water reuse make sense for my projects? Because I think it's just not something that we have traditionally done. So much of the focus around sustainability has just been on energy, has been on decarbonization, which again are super, super important, but water has kind of been this ignored piece. And we see it as people just leaving money on the table. And so I think that's I think a big takeaway is, if nothing else, you know, we move away from this flush and forget society mindset that we have, where we don't think about these things and we instead say, hey, maybe this is something we should think about.
Aaron Tartakovsky has been our guest. He is the co-founder and CEO of Epic Cleantech. And as you can hear, some really exciting stuff, technology to recycle water and to get us from this really pathetic 2% of wastewater recycling to something much more on a scale of maybe Spain, where there's 35%, or hopefully even what Israel does with 90% of water recycling. Aaron, this is really interesting stuff. Keep us posted on progress. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me. I'm always happy to chat wastewater early in the morning.